Our scripture this morning begins in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 9, beginning with verse 24. For Christ did not enter a sanctuary made with human hands that was only a copy of the true one. He entered heaven itself, not to appear for us now to appear for us in God's presence. Nor did he enter heaven to offer himself again and again, the way the high priest enters the most holy place every year with blood that is not his own. Otherwise, Christ would have had to suffer many times since the creation of the world. But he has appeared once for all at the culmination of the ages to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself, just as people are destined to die once, and after that to face judgment. So Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many, and he will appear a second time, not to bear sin, but to bring salvation to those who are waiting for him. Then to the book of Revelation, beginning in chapter 5 with verse 1. Revelation 5, verse 1. Then I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll with writing on both sides and sealed with seven seals. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming in a loud voice, "Who is worthy to break the seals and open the scroll?" But no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth could open the scroll or even look inside it. I wept and wept because no one was found who was worthy to open the scroll or look inside. Then one of the elders said to me, "Do not weep. See, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has triumphed. He is able to open the scroll and its seven seals." Then I saw a lamb looking as if it had been slain, standing at the center of the throne, encircled by the four living creatures and the elders. The lamb had seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out onto the earth. He went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And when he had taken it, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. Each one had a harp, and they were holding golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of God's people. And they sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, because you were slain. And with your blood you purchased for God persons from every tribe and language and people and nation. You have made them to be a kingdom and priest to serve our God, and they will reign on the earth." And then moving to chapter 20, beginning with verse 11, Revelation 20, verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne, and him who was seated on it. The earth and the heavens fled from his presence, and there was no place for them. I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. The sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them. And each person was judged according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. The lake of fire is the second death, and anyone whose name was not found written in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire. Several years ago now, There was a family in Tennessee, a large family, a loving family, that had gathered together to celebrate two things in May. One was the engagement of their eldest daughter. The other was the graduation of their eldest son. And so you can imagine the kind of pandemonium going on as parents are trying to pull together these festivities. And the 17-year-old son went away on an errand. And when he came back in the family SUV, he was backing into his normal parking place. The family also had several younger children, and one included a 5-year-old daughter who came running to greet her brother when she saw the car. He did not see her when he was backing up, and he hit her. Everything broke loose there. The father came running to his little daughter, tried CPR as the paramedics were coming in. They eventually had to rush her to Vanderbilt University Medical Center. And then a while later, the doctor came out to tell them that she had died. The father had made sure that he had told his 17-year-old son that he loved him in the middle of all of this chaos. Why do I mention this story? The father happened to be Stephen Curtis Chapman. That name might not mean anything to you, but he was and has been a prominent figure in contemporary Christian music. And so he obviously came under a lot of scrutiny during this time period. And I don't want to participate in that scrutiny. I don't want to participate in the gossip that's associated with that. But they themselves wanted the story to be told. It's so easy for us to think about these kinds of things and say, oh, that's a sermon illustration. And I'd be very hesitant to do anything like that. These are real people with real suffering, real problems. And one of the reasons I mention it is because I know some of you have had stories of sorrow and suffering and can relate. In the middle of all this, there were those on the outside, those who were skeptical about Stephen's faith, who were asking, well, now is he going to spurn God and turn away from this in the middle of this? So many of us in these situations ask ourselves, why did God let this happen? Where was God when the teenager was backing up? Why didn't he stop that from happening? Whenever these discussions come to the front, I think about a story in C.S. Lewis's life. C.S. Lewis, that famous British writer who gave us the Chronicles of Narnia, Mere Christianity, a number of other classical books presenting the Christian faith. Toward the end of his life, its later years, Lewis, who had been a confirmed bachelor for decades, met a woman named Joy that he married when he was 58 years old. And over the next 4 years, they had a short, brief time together because she had cancer. And at the end of that time, she died. And Lewis had to wrestle with the same kind of emotions that we all have wrestled with in times of tragedy, in times of death, in times of losing loved ones. At this point, he had the sons that Joy had brought into the marriage. She had been divorced and she came with 2 boys. There's a play version that got turned into a movie that relates the story. It's called Shadowlands. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's well worth your attention. There's a scene in the film version where Lewis, who's actually known among his friends as Jack, so Jack sits down with one of the boys, Douglas, And at this point, they are both sharing their grief. They're both asking questions. Why did she have to die? And at one point, Douglas turns to his dad and says, "Do you believe in God?" Jack says, "Yes, I do." And then Douglas, in the raw pain of the event, says, "I don't think I do." And I think that's the way many of us approach grief. When we see death, when we face separation, when we see the world as it really is, when our sin has been the characteristic element of our life and shapes our life. And so, in this moment, when we focus on these kinds of stories, when we look at our own grief and we ask these kind of questions, where is God? What is God doing? Why did God allow this? How do we answer those questions? Here this morning, we're going to turn to the book of Revelation. One of the books that I think is among the top books that are most misunderstood. This was a book that was written to bring comfort. So many people read Revelation and they're either scared or they are dumbfounded or they don't know what in the world they're reading. But we think about Revelation, and in Revelation we see two images for Christ. We think a couple weeks ago we were talking about prophet, priest, and king. We think about human roles. But here in Revelation, we get animals. It's an interesting thing. We get a lamb and we get a lion. So many of us, when we think about Jesus, we want to portray him as a lion. Because, as I said before, we like to see him as the king. We like to see him as the one in charge. We don't like to see him, as we said last week, descending into humiliation for our sake. So we understand lion fairly well, but then also lamb. What is a lamb? If we think about stories about what is the weakest of animals, or animals that are prey, that animals that in the Old Testament are taken to slaughter. The lamb is one of the premier ones. And so last time we were talking about Christ assuming the form of a slave in his descent from God's throne to the earth. Here now, descending into the role of a lamb. Not just being the lion, but also being the lamb. And to understand the significance of that, once again, quickly rehearse what we already know. The Old Testament, the first human beings, as Lori was reminding us, Adam and Eve, their disobedience leads to exile. God pushes them out of the Garden of Eden. And then, what's the next story? I don't think it's accidental. Once sin has come into the world, what happens? Violence. Death. We have one brother killing another brother. And if you read through Genesis, those next several chapters, it just says that spreads like wildfire. As the human race starts growing and spreading, what also grows and spreads with them? Violence and death. And we get that point that many of us pause on in Genesis, where it says God regretted creating human beings. Why? Because they were at war with one another. Violence was reigning. And as we see the Old Testament progressing, it is a violent world. I challenge you to read the book of Judges from first chapter to last chapter and not feel kind of sick by the time you get to the end of it. That kind of a violent world. So at that point, we could look at this and say, God was entirely justified to walk away from that project. And then part of us sort of see that in the flood, that God sends the flood to destroy all these violent people, but holds on to the remnant of Noah and his family. And so Noah and his family get on the ark and come off the ark, and then we see the glimpse of a new plan. God says, I'm not going to do that again. Instead, I'm going to establish covenant with you. And so covenant begins with Noah and his family, but then later we see with Abraham and Sarah, covenant gathering momentum, more things added to it, a place, a land to live in, a people to be there, God communicating to these people and allowing them to be a light to the nations. But throughout all of this, even as the law is introduced with Moses and Aaron and company, that doesn't seem to be enough. As we read in that section of Hebrews that we selected for this morning, we see that in the Old Testament world, there's the sin. You go to the priest if you are willing to repair the relationship with God. There's a sacrifice. The priest pronounces forgiveness. You go. And then there's another sin. And it seems like this is the endless process. All these animals that are killed because of human sin. This cycle over and over and over again. But the book of Hebrews here saying, okay, we acknowledge that Jesus is the sacrifice. Jesus is the lamb. But not like that. This is it. This is God's decisive act. It happens once. That's all that's needed. But to think about the Son of God coming to take on the form of a lamb to sacrifice, how can we even hold up our heads? The image of the lamb's blood. But when we turn to that passage in Revelation that's supposed to comfort us, that passage about the scroll with the seals on it, and there's no one anywhere worthy to open it until the elder says, the Lion of Judah can open it. And we come to that other image of the lion, the majestic image of the lion. We human beings even refer to the lion as the king of the jungle. And once again, if you think about C.S. Lewis, if you know the Chronicles of Narnia, he had a Christ figure in his fantasy. And what role, what image did he give, did Lewis give to his Christ figure? He made him a lion, Aslan. And so if you read the Chronicles of Narnia, you get caught up in that image. There's something very attractive about seeing Christ as a lion. That the Lion of Judah has triumphed, that the Lion of Judah is the one who can open the scroll. But once again, we talk about reversals. We were talking about reversals last week, about in weakness, Christ shows his strength. How does the Lion of Judah show up in the next verse? As the Lamb. With marks of slaughter. And so we think about the marks of the crucifixion on Christ. And then the next verse, just in case we didn't get it, it says, you are worthy to open this scroll because you sacrificed yourself. And so as we read and meditate on these passages, we realize that the lion shows up with the lamb. And once again, we've got to hold these images together in our minds, and it can be difficult. But towards the end of the book of Revelation, we know that the lion has the power to judge the nations. It speaks about the day of judgment, which is another thing that's affirmed in the Nicene Creed and the Apostles' Creed, that he will come again to judge the living and the dead. And Revelation 20 speaks about the dead coming, rising to come before the throne for that judgment. And Jesus himself had given us the parable of the sheep and the goats to portray that day. And so this is the image of Christ that we usually gravitate toward when we think about his majesty. But we hold the two together as we read Revelation and as we understand that this is a book of comfort. So what do these passages in Hebrews and Revelation then say about our tragedies? About what happens when we face death? Well, the first thing is Revelation is a very realistic book. It was written during a time of persecution to Christians who were being persecuted. So there's no denial about death in the book of Revelation. This is not an attempt at comfort that doesn't face the problem. This faces the problem head on. And what does it say? That we can dare to believe in a happy ending. When you think about Jack and Douglas sitting there dealing with their grief, and the little boy says, "I don't believe in God," he can't believe in a happy ending yet. And the poignancy of that moment is Jack, when he was a little boy, had also lost his mother. And then Jack, C.S. Lewis, went on for several years in his anger, and eventually became a professed atheist for years before he had his conversion. And so there are moments in our lives when we do get stuck in our grief, and we wonder if we can have faith in a happy ending. But then we pick up the book of Revelation, and we see the Lamb and the lion. How does the lamb give us hope? The lamb tells us God did not abandon us to our suffering. That God did not leave us in violence, leave us to deal with death on our own. The lamb offers the image of grace, that in suffering, Christ is there with us. As we said 2 weeks ago, we don't have a high priest who doesn't know anything about our condition. Instead, we have a high priest who has lived among us and endured our greatest sufferings for our sake. And then Isaiah tells us by his wounds, we find healing. So, on one side, Christ offers us companionship in the middle of suffering. Those are the lessons we learn from the Lamb. But as we go to the Lamb, we realize also something amazing, something majestic, something profoundly beautiful. That the Lamb is not just another martyr, another victim of violence that can have no say-so, that's just tossed around by powerful people. Instead, that lamb is also the lion. that the one who is crucified is the one who's resurrected. And in the resurrection, we see the King embracing life, overcoming sin and death, and we see the one who will judge the nations. And so, in our grief, we also learn lessons from the lion, that the grief is not the final chapter, that we can hope in a happy ending, and that the lion will deliver us. He is our Messiah. So as you look around the world, as you see stories of grief, as you wrestle with the own devastation that death can bring in your own life, remember the Lamb and His sacrifice for you. He will be with you in the suffering. But remember that that Lamb is also the Lion who will deliver you and bring you to a new life. This morning we come now to our time of invitation and commitment, a time for you to consider your own stance before God. If you've never made a commitment to follow Christ, today is a time to do so. And this church will pray for you and encourage you on that journey. If you've already made that commitment, then ask yourself, are you attuned to the Lamb and the Lion? And are you listening to His call? As we stand together and sing.